Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday once again. It is the 19th of March, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, happy Friday, everyone.
It is indeed. And once again, I have Andrew with me, and it's Friday, and that can only mean one thing, and that is Security Friday. And so we are here to give you news and information and updates on your data and your privacy and basically how everyone else is trying to take them from you for the most part. Here's kind of an interesting thing that John Keat wrote up for us yesterday, actually. Hi, John, recent guest on the program. He found an article about bit flipping, which is really interesting. And it's because I'm going to read you the sentence from the article, which was the part that caught his attention. Research has shown that a computer with 4 gigabytes of memory has a 96% chance of having a random bit flip every 3 days. So what a bit flip is something happens where a little bit of some data on your computer sort of gets corrupted. And depending on the bit of data, it could be as small as one pixel of the image that you're working on in Photoshop changes to a slightly different hue than what it's supposed to be. It could be if it's a URL, and this is where it sort of gets interesting. If it's a URL where this happens, it could send you to the wrong URL. So like at whndows.com would be what happens if you get a bit flip in windows.com. So there were a bunch of these sort of corrupted things that can happen to people. And the article is looking at how that could possibly be an attack vector. So it's a very interesting read. You should go check it out. Right now it's more just a thing to be aware of than it is, an actual, sort of security threat, but it could be used that way and weaponized. And it sounds like it could be weaponized reasonably easily. And, so that's a thing to look out for.
I forget what that's called. I think a homograph attack, where URLs are misspelled like Google, but it's three O's, for example, and it's just a way to trick you into going to their website.
Yeah.
I know the DNS service I use is called NextDNS. They can protect against that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure other DNS services can as well. Yeah. So there is some protection at least.
Yeah, it can be slightly harder to actually go to the wrong one accidentally, which is good. So definitely a thing to look at. And it also might be worth relying a little more on autocomplete or autosuggest in your browser so that you end up at windows.com and not whndows.com. So look a little closer before you hit return, kids. We have another bit of news, which I think is interesting. We got this from... you wrote this up from 9to5 Mac about separating out the kinds of updates you get on iOS.
Yeah, 9to5 Mac was digging into the code of the fourth beta of iOS 14.5 that came out for developers earlier this week. And it sounds like iOS updates could be becoming more similar to how they get treated on macOS sometimes. Like on older versions of macOS, Apple will split out the regular software update and then a security or a supplemental update. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like iOS could be getting that too. So you'll see they gave a screenshot where you'll see some toggle in settings, probably general software update. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see two different toggles, one for a security update and one for a software update. I said, this usually really only happens, like you only see this on older versions of macOS. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure, and I don't think they mentioned this. I'm not sure if this would be for all versions of iOS or maybe just older ones.
Okay.
So I guess we'll have to see until 14.5 is released, which should happen pretty soon.
Yeah, we're on beta 4 right now. And I know a lot of people who went to beta 3 and basically said, like, there has been no indication in my heavy use that this is in fact a beta. I'm not running into sharp edges or anything. And that was on beta 3. So beta 4 might have done some slight refinement, and maybe we'll get that very soon. We'll have to see. Next up, we have an interesting feature for people who use Dropbox.
Yeah, so Dropbox launched this product last year called Dropbox Passwords. It's kind of a built-in password manager that they have. So when they first launched it, it was just for paid users. Mm-hmm. But they announced earlier this week that it's going to be rolling out to free users starting in April. And mm-hmm. you can sign up on their website to be notified. Now, of course, since it's free, there will be some limitations, which is like it makes sense. But at the same time, so Dropbox basic users will be able to store up to 50 passwords in Dropbox mm-hmm. and then sync up to 3 devices. And as I wrote in my link teaser, it's cool that they did this, but you can find a free actual password manager with less limitations like that.
Yes.
So I'm not really sure what the, like, why they're doing this. I guess maybe if you just want to have it built in.
Yeah, I think it's, and also, you know, it's very much the first one's free kind of a thing, you know, get people hooked on Dropbox passwords and like, oh, I guess I have to pay. And maybe if they weren't getting people to pay for storage, maybe they'll get people to pay for the password management and get a slightly larger, get a paid account instead of just use the free one. Honestly, yeah. I think 50 passwords would do it for a whole lot of people, though. I mean, even if, you know, as far as like 50 different places you can go. So it's not like they're giving you 5, you know, and then that's it. So for a lot of people, I think this will help. And it's definitely going to be better than no password management. So that hopefully that will be an interesting feature. I have a free Dropbox account. I'm probably not going to change that, and I'm probably not going to use this. But if you're a person who has it now or would like to be using it and do when you roll it out, we'd like to hear about your experience. Like I said, I'm probably not going to use it, but I'm curious if it works, because it might be an easy thing to recommend to people. Like, if you're already a Dropbox user, do you know that Dropbox will do this password thing for you? And then, you know, that might be an easy way to at least get some people to improve password hygiene. That would be good. So. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. Let's see. Next up, we have so much news today, everybody. So yeah. if it feels like we're going really fast, we kind of are. We have a report from a company called pCloud, which is a follow-up on one of our favorite topics here on Security Friday about the privacy labels in the App Store.
So I'm going to back up. Just a little bit, because we were sharing this list of what order we like to do this thing, and the list that Kelly showed me.
And did you just realize I skipped a couple too?
Yeah. Okay. And I didn't realize that before we started.
I didn't either. That's okay. I looked right now and went, oh, there's 2 things we didn't even use. Okay. So, hey, Andrew, what's next up in the news?
Yeah, so we can, you know, go through these quickly as well. But, you know, just more news that happened. So first of all, there is this military contractor called the Ulysses Group, and they want to start selling vehicle location data to the military. Vice is the one that wrote this up. And mm-hmm. the quote that I shared is, Ulysses can provide our clients with the ability to remotely geolocate vehicles in every nearly country except for North Korea and Cuba on a near real-time basis. And they currently have access to over 15 billion vehicle locations around the world every month. So, yeah.
That's totally... This is fine. Like, I don't even know where to go with this one.
Yeah.
Mostly because the thing about this that I thought was sort of the alarming piece of it was we have it and we would like to sell it to you. Not we could go put this together on your behalf, but we have it. it's here and we've got this stack of data that we would like to give you. Can we, do you want a bow on top when we hand it over? That was the part that I thought was more worrying, was that this was past tense. We have this data, not we can get this data. That was the part I thought was sort of alarming. So yeah, super great. Yeah,
they did want to reach out to Vice and say they haven't actually sold it yet, just that they want to.
Yeah. And like, that's the rest of it is like did they offer and the military hasn't said anything? So they went to Vice to get more attention for it. Like, I don't know what's going on with this, but like, yeah, I'm a little worried about what the Ulysses group is up to right now. Super great. So what else do we have in the news, Andrew?
So the other one is a new form of malware that is explicitly targeting Apple developers through Xcode. It's not that. So Ars Technica wrote this up. It's targeting developers in Xcode. I don't think there are like, like infected versions of Xcode already out there.
Right.
It's just something called Xcode Spy. And it can be used to install a backdoor into macOS.
Mm-hmm.
So just a quick quote. It copies this open source project that is legitimate called Tab Bar Interaction. Mm-hmm. And this makes it easier for developers to animate iOS tab bars based on user interaction. So if you are infected with Xcode Spy, when you launch this malicious project, a script contacts its command and control server, which downloads the backdoor called Eggshell, and it can spy on users via their camera, their microphone, and keyboard. And there are two different variants that have been found in the wild. So the first one found last August, and the second one last October.
Okay. So this is one of those that is specific, but if you have it, is pretty scary, because like you said, tab bar interaction is a legit thing a lot of developers use, and this masquerades as that and then turns into something else that's pretty bad. So this is another one of those, be careful about the stuff you're downloading and where it's coming from, and make sure that you're getting what you actually should. And if you're doing anything in Xcode, be doubly careful about what you're adding to your projects. It's pretty alarming. All right. So we got in all of our bonus content. let's try one more time to talk about privacy labels in the App Store.
Yes. So this cloud storage provider called pCloud, they released a report of the most invasive apps on iOS based on their iOS 14 privacy labels. It looks like it's a list of 50 apps. Instagram is number one. Facebook is number two. I don't think anyone's surprised by that.
My shocked face. Let me show you it. Yeah.
Yeah, just a couple more examples. So LinkedIn is number three. Uber Eats is number four. So like the top, you know, 5-10 are mostly social media apps.
Mm-hmm.
And they said 52% of these apps are sharing your data with third parties. These entities could be associated with the company itself, or the developers could just be selling access to their users' data. They did mention a couple names of these companies. There is BuzzSumo and Hootsuite.
Okay. Now, Hootsuite, I know, is a social media scheduling app, so you can line up like all your tweets for the week or for the weekend or whatever and have them scheduled, and then they just get fired off. Now, how they hook that into Facebook and Instagram, I'm not really sure. And BuzzSumo is the similar sort of thing. Like, I want to track engagement on these and, you know, how far, what kind of reach I get on the stuff that I'm posting on social media. So that's all I can tell you about those companies. The thing I thought was interesting was that they also had some safe apps, and Netflix is one of the safest that keeps your data secret.
That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So Netflix, Signal, another one that really isn't a surprise. We've mentioned that before. Signal is just this end-to-end encrypted open source messaging app.
Yeah. So
and then another another one that I thought was interesting, it's Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. That is kind of a newer app. There was some buzz on Twitter that I saw where it was like accessing your contacts. But according to pCloud, maybe they do access that, but they don't sell it.
They ask you. So it's not secret. Like it says, do you want to let Clubhouse have access to your contacts? So it's obvious that they're doing that. What they do with that is apparently safer than maybe we thought. But what's the Clubhouse one stuck out to me because I had I've gotten some text spam, which I basically never got before. And I've gotten a message every day or two since I signed up for Clubhouse. And that's the only thing that I can think of that changed because it requires a phone number. So, that's how, so I'm not saying it's Clubhouse's fault that that's happening, but somebody's finding a way to get those numbers out of Clubhouse, I think. And someone else has mentioned a similar thing, which is why I was like, it's weird. I'm getting text spam all of a sudden. And then somebody else said, yeah, I've started getting text spam. And like the day after I signed up for Clubhouse, I started getting text spam. I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's what it is. So, somebody found a way to get Clubhouse phone numbers, I think. This is completely a theory. I'm not sure. And yes, the plural of anecdote is not data. There's a reason the word is anecdata for a reason. And I'm not convinced. But at least in my case, it's not terrible. Like I said, it's a message every day or two. So not a big deal.
Yeah.
But Netflix keeping your data secret. I'm pretty glad about that. Mostly because I use Netflix a lot.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm glad it's not public. So we're going to spend a few minutes talking about security keys. So first of all, I think we should start with the headline here, which is Facebook did something good for users.
Yes. So Facebook, they announced on Thursday that they now support these two-factor authentication security keys on their mobile apps on iOS and Android.
Okay.
So thanks, Facebook.
Yeah.
And then Twitter announced that they are now supporting, you can have multiple security keys with your account. So you can have one key that's your main one and then another one as a backup.
Okay. That's another, that's an interesting way to go about it. Now, let's talk for a minute about what we're talking about here. So when we talk about hardware keys, give us a little bit of explainer on what that actually is.
So there are a couple of different authentication methods you can use if you add two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. And the most usual one is using a special authenticator app, or I think most password managers have this built in nowadays. Mm-hmm. And that just means that when you go to log in, it will ask you for your special one-time password. That is, like, if you use one of these keys, it's a six-digit number, and it changes every 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. So it's just a more secure way to protect your account.
Yeah, if you see these, sometimes you'll see them as a TOTP password, which stands for time-based one-time password. I know 1Password has management for this. If you have things that want one of these follow-up codes, 1Password can manage that for you. And I think one of the other ones can as well, but I don't remember if it's LastPass or Dashlane, but I think one of them also has support for that as well. So like TOTP is the other thing that you will see that, like, or with an authenticator app is enter this 6-digit code before it expires kind of a thing. So they do, those are the same mechanism.
Yeah. And so a security key is just the hardware version of that. It's this USB device that you can plug in. Not all accounts, websites that provide two-factor authentication support these physical keys. It's usually, like I said, a authenticator app or SMS, just mm-hmm. texting you one of those numbers. But when you do have a service that does support it, like Facebook or Twitter, it will ask you, instead of copying and pasting your one-time password, you can plug in your USB. Mm-hmm. Or there's another variation where you actually see that same six-digit number If it has like a little LED indicator and just type it in that way.
Yeah. And some of them, like if you're using the hardware ones with a USB port, some of them will allow you to bypass entering it. And what they're doing is just verifying that the hardware key that you say is yours is in the USB port of the device you're trying to use to sign in. And sometimes you can skip that, like bank. A lot of times if you have bank stuff to do or something that requires some sort of security clearance or something, you'll have one of these little widgets that sort of looks like a thumb drive and you stick it in your computer. And then that will sort of communicate with the bank website or whatever and let it know like the extra verification is here. It's fine. And then as soon as you unplug it, nothing works anymore, you know, on that particular account. So they are pretty interesting. So,
yeah.
And very useful.
I have, yeah. In the past, I've reviewed one called, it's a YubiKey. They make multiple variations. The company is called YubiKo. Mm-hmm. I haven't really checked out any other companies that make these keys. I know Google announced at one point that they were making keys, but I'm not sure if they were only for their employees or if they sell them to the public. I think it maybe was just for employees. So
yeah, the most common one is the YubiKey, and you can get that in a flavor that will work on an iOS device as well as on a regular machine as well, on a computer of some sort. So I think a lot of things are going to end up going that way just because security is, it makes the security piece of it easier if I just plug this thing in and you know I'm legit, you know, sort of like a house key. Like, I don't have to know anything about the house key. I just have to know where the key is and where the lock is and then put them together and I can get inside. So, I would very much like to have to carry around less passwords. It would be great. So,
No, you'll just have to carry around a USB key instead.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a lot of keys on my keys anyway, so, you know, I got room. So that's going to do it for us today. Everyone have a great weekend. Thank you so much, Andrew, for coming by. I will talk to you all again on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.